This is side 8 of Macular Degeneration by Lilas Mock and Marja Mock. George Nevers is your reader for this section, and we'll continue with chapter 13 on page 337, Saving Sight on the Road, Driving, Alternatives, and Traveling. A couple of quotes to introduce this chapter. First, by John Patrick Reynolds. When I lost my license, I thought, you might as well shoot me. Why do I want to live if I can't drive? A second by Bixley Bennett. I first met Celia when she agreed to drive for me. Now she's become one of my very best friends. What a funny way life has of giving you gifts when you least expect them. For just about everyone, except perhaps for folks in New York City who've never owned cars, losing one's license may be the worst blow that macular degeneration delivers. I have heard many people like Pat Reynolds tell me that they'd rather not live than not drive. We've grown to accept cars as essential to our lifestyle, but they are more than just vehicles for getting around. We see them as representations of our personal style, success, sense of security, and even sexuality. They're part of our memories. Remember the beautiful 12-cylinder Lincoln Zephyrs and the smart Studebakers parading down the avenues after World War II? Remember your first car, your favorite car? The great irony of our love affair with cars is that they don't necessarily love us back. They're expensive. They encourage us to be dependent on them. They contribute to pollution that causes global warming. They divert funds from public transportation, and they require that we see well enough to pass our state's license exam. That's not what I call a supportive relationship. Every time I talk to people who have just returned from a trip to some great European city like Paris or Munich, they rave about how wonderful the public transportation is there and how nice it is to get around town without driving. Each time I think, what are we doing? Shouldn't we be just as committed to public transportation here, just as willing to use it and just as vocal to our legislators about its value? Wouldn't it be nice to see ourselves independently of our cars? Well, we can. We must, really, because otherwise we will just drive ourselves nuts and wind up inside the house every day. That's no way to live. The good news is that there are lots of alternatives to cars. We just have to seek them out and start using them. In the meantime, if your vision loss is mild, you may still be eligible to drive. This chapter explains all of your options. Your license and the Department of Motor Vehicles, the DMV. As you know, vision test results on a 20/20 scale are the holy grail of the DMV. They take these test scores as the gospel truth about whether or not you're able to drive safely, which is puzzling, since the research on driving just doesn't support that conclusion. The 20/20 scale measures only visual acuity, how crisply you see static, printed letters on a chart or screen. It doesn't measure other factors that directly contribute to driving competence, like contrast sensitivity, whether you can distinguish objects from a similarly colored background, dynamic acuity, how well you see when you're actually driving rather than when you're standing motionless in the DMV, glare sensitivity, processing time, how quickly your mind synthesizes visual information, reaction time, how quickly you react physically when you realize what's happening, or a sense of one's own mortality. The most dangerous drivers on the road today are not people with mild low vision from macular degeneration, but young men under the age of 25 with excellent vision and terrible judgment. A movement is underway among low vision professionals to change the state DMV driving requirements to better reflect current research. But until that happens, we all have to live with the current rules, which are more complex than you might think. Each state has its own vision requirements for driving, and no two are alike. Canadian readers see Appendix F. Driving with visual aids. More than half the states allow drivers to use special bioptic telescopes for driving. These tiny telescopes are mounted on your regular eyeglass frame and used for seeing stoplights and traffic signs. Many people with the juvenile form of macular degeneration called Stargardt's disease drive successfully with these telescopes. These optical aids are also available to people with age-related macular degeneration, although a couple of catches make them less appealing for older people than they are for younger adults. First, bioptic telescopes must be prescribed by an ophthalmologist or optometrist and are usually quite expensive, costing between $500 and $1,000. The state may also require that you pay for a special driver training class. Then you must pass the driving test with the likelihood of no refund for either the telescopes or the training should you not pass. Medicare does not cover bioptic telescopes for driving, and private insurance rarely covers them. Second, age-related macular degeneration often does more extensive damage to the retina than Stargardt's disease does. With AMD, you may not be able to use bioptic telescopes as effectively as someone with Stargardt's can. AMD is also progressive, so you may be able to use your bioptic telescopes for only a relatively short period of time before you lose additional vision. However, some people do keep a significant amount of vision with macular degeneration for many years. If you would like to try bioptic telescopes, check with your DMV office to see if they are permissible and contact your doctor for a referral to a low-vision ophthalmologist or optometrist or visit a visual rehabilitation program. You may also want to read Eli and Doron Pelley's book, P-E-L-I, Driving with Confidence, A Practical Guide to Driving with Low Vision, which is printed in large type, and contact a low-vision driver training specialist in your area who is familiar with your state's test. See Appendix D for contact information. Driving with a restricted license. If you have less than the required vision in either one or both eyes, 20/40 in most states, you may qualify for a restricted license that allows you to drive under limited conditions, such as only during daylight, in your neighborhood, or under a certain speed limit. The vision minimums for a restricted license vary widely. For example, as of 2002, New York's minimum was 20/70. North Carolina, 2100. California, 2200. Contact your local DMV office or visit your state's DMV website for current restricted license information. Remember, if your doctor writes a letter endorsing your ability to drive, he or she must also state that you have vision that meets the state's requirements on a 20/20 scale. Otherwise, you will be denied a license regardless of what else your doctor may say about your capabilities. Tips for taking the DMV tests. Know the whole story before you go. In many states, you only need good vision in one eye to qualify for a license. However, the clerk may mistakenly deny your application or comment on your limited vision. Don't be intimidated. Know your state's DMV rules before you go for testing and mention them if necessary. Find out ahead of time if you are eligible for a restricted license and request one if necessary. If your DMV office has poor lighting or you suspect that the vision testing machine may underestimate your vision, call ahead and ask if you can be evaluated at your doctor's office. Many states allow you to use these results instead, but they will not be valid once you take the DMV's test. Put your best foot forward. Consider practicing driving on the streets in the vicinity of the DMV ahead of time so that you are familiar with the area, the lights, and the traffic patterns. Practice at the same time of day that you'll be taking your driving test. Go for testing on a good weather day when you feel rested and focused. Do not go at dusk or when it's raining. Dress in your nicest or most businesslike outfit. Square your shoulders and walk in with confidence. Keep in mind that you may be observed from the moment you enter the building for signs of alert, awareness, and competence. During the driving test, wear amber-colored sunglasses or lenses to reduce glare and increase your contrast perception. Remember that the first word isn't final. Do not accept the decision of any single DMV employee on your ability to drive according to the state's regulations. If you are rejected, keep calm and request a full re-evaluation. Should I keep driving? Of course, the law dictates that you may not drive if your vision is below the minimum required for licensure in your state, even if your state's vision requirements are arbitrary and do not actually reflect your ability to drive safely, as unfair as this is. Since driving is central to daily life for most Americans, and our vision is tested infrequently, especially by the DMV, many people with macular degeneration still have valid licenses, would like to continue driving, and wonder when they should make the decision to stop. Some folks with macular degeneration still have good acuity, but since acuity is only one factor among many that makes a driver safe, they sometimes sense that they nevertheless aren't as effective on the road as they'd like to be. "I stopped driving even though my doctor said I could still see well enough," Dolly Kowalski told me, "because I said to myself, what if I hit a child? I couldn't live with that." Dolly's decision turned out to be wise given her particular pattern of vision. She has very low contrast sensitivity, which makes it difficult for her to see objects against similarly colored backgrounds. Darting children in cream-colored jackets playing by tan-colored cars on a light gray concrete street would be hard for her to see, even though her acuity is technically quite good. Other folks drive until they have a surprising near miss or a minor accident, a brush with a parked car, or a collision with the garage door frame. Yet others continue to drive quite safely while their vision is still strong. So what should you do? If you have any doubts, do not drive. If you are unsure about the quality of your vision, you can ask your low-vision optometrist or ophthalmologist or visual rehabilitation program to assess your vision and talk with you about driving. See Appendix A for contact information. You might also want to consider the following questions, which were inspired by Ellie and Doron Pelley's self-test in Driving with Confidence, A Practical Guide to Driving with Low Vision. The Macular Degeneration Driving Self-Test. 1. When you are driving, do objects like other cars or pedestrians catch you by surprise? Do they seem to appear out of nowhere? 2. Have you recently not seen another car until the driver honked, or not seen a parked vehicle until you were right next to it? Do other drivers honk at you for no apparent reason? 3. Do you have a stiff neck or limited neck rotation? Do you find it difficult to turn your head and scan the whole landscape in front of you? 4. Have you noticed that your reflexes are much slower than they used to be and your reaction time is much longer? Does it take you a number of seconds to react to an event on the road? 5. Do you ever feel momentarily confused or unsure when you are driving? Does driving make you nervous or uncomfortable? 6. Has a family member or friend suggested that you stop driving and given you examples of why he or she thinks so? 7. Do you have low contrast sensitivity? Do you find it relatively difficult to distinguish an object that is sitting against a background of the same color? 8. Is your visual acuity on a 20/20 scale below the minimum level required by your state? Pearls of wisdom for driving. If you answered no to the self-test questions above, then you can feel confident continuing to drive. You may want to follow these pearls. Start using alternatives today. Use public transportation and other alternatives as much as you can while you have your license. This may feel like giving up some precious driving time too early, but it's very savvy. Better to feel confident and in control of the future than to let it catch you by surprise. Take an AARP 55 Alive course. This course offers a special curriculum for drivers over 55 to sharpen their general driving skills. See Appendix D for classes in your area. Drive strategically. Plan ahead to avoid driving at the riskiest times, at dusk when it's more difficult to see, and when you are rushed or tired. Wear glare-blocking sunglasses. Wear amber-colored sunglasses or lenses to reduce glare from sunlight and snow and increase your contrast perception. See the catalog listings in Appendix C. Share a ride. Consider calling a friend who doesn't drive and offering to share a ride. We're all in this crazy adventure called life together. What better way to enjoy it than sharing the road? When driving is no longer possible. If you answered yes to any of the preceding self-test questions, then you probably should not continue to drive before consulting your doctor, especially at dusk or at night, at high speeds, or on busy streets. If you answered yes to number 8, then you definitely should not be driving. But do not despair. You are not the sum total of your car, and neither is your life. Keep reading. There are many other options for getting around town, traveling, and being active and engaged with friends, family, and the world. Hooray for alternatives! As you know better than anyone, it's very difficult to give up driving, but a number of alternatives can enable you to remain independent and continue doing the things that you enjoy. If you are thinking of moving, consider living within an easy distance of the places you'd like to go and factoring alternative modes of transportation into your decision on where to relocate. Walking. Walking is incredibly beneficial for your health. Many of the healthiest seniors I've met walk between 1/2 mile and 3 miles a day. They walk to the store, the post office, and the park, to volunteer at organizations and neighbors' homes, and just for pleasure or exercise. Walking is a particularly good option if you have strong bones and good balance. Plan your routes to cross at lighted crosswalks. Consider carrying lightweight binoculars or a monocular telescope to read traffic lights and street signs and to see storefronts and people at a distance. Wear amber-colored sunglasses to reduce glare and increase contrast sensitivity, which makes seeing irregularities in the sidewalk easier. I also recommend carrying a lightweight collapsible white identification cane, which you can use when crossing busy streets to alert drivers and induce them to be more careful. Riding three-wheeled bikes and battery-powered scooters. While walking has tremendous benefits, it often precludes carrying packages or purchases, especially if they're heavy. For bringing goods home, try taking a lightweight wheeled shopping cart with you or riding a three-wheeled bike with a large basket. Or a battery-powered scooter, especially if the sidewalks are good in your area. Unlike golf carts, battery-powered scooters are only as wide as a person and go at walking speed. You can also ride your three-wheel bike at walking speed. Use the tips from walking earlier and remember to be especially cautious when crossing streets, since you may be riding below the level of some driver's line of vision. Some people put a bicycle flag on their bike or scooter for greater visibility. Shopping carts are inexpensive and available at your local mart. Bikes and battery-powered scooters vary in price. Call your local bike retailer to ask about three-wheeled bikes and see Appendix C for scooter manufacturer information. If you are a veteran, you may be eligible for a free or subsidized battery-powered scooter. Contact your local VA office or call 800-827-1000 for information. Hiring and sharing drivers. If you sell your car and take all the money you once spent on it in gas, insurance, and maintenance, you probably can afford to hire a driver with a car at least once a week. If you were to pool your money with a friend or two who live nearby, you could hire a driver for several days a week. There may be high school seniors, college students, community volunteers, or even family members who would welcome the opportunity to drive for you part-time. Alternatively, you could arrange to loan your own car indefinitely to a family member or trusted friend with the clear agreement that he or she pay for the extra gas used and be your driver a few times a week. Remember, outside of the convenience, there's nothing inherently special about driving yourself around. The richest people in the world have chauffeurs. Taking taxis. If you live in a city with many taxis and many competitive customers, consider carrying a neon yellow card at least 5 by 8 inches high with the word taxi written in large black print. Hold the card up when you need a ride and a taxi will find you. You can make a card yourself or order one from a low vision catalog. If you live in a metropolitan area with fewer taxis and you have friends with low vision, consider scheduling a regular weekly or biweekly shared taxi ride to lunch, the hairstylist, shopping centers, or religious services. Taxi companies in low-traffic areas tend to be more responsive to regular or pre-scheduled customers than to last-minute calls. However, they are not always prompt. Build in a certain amount of additional time so that you aren't rushed. Using senior transit and paratransit. Many public transportation departments offer special transportation services for seniors, as do some churches, mosques, synagogues, senior centers, and community centers. Check with your clergy, county, or city offices for more information. Usually, these services provide door-to-door transportation in a small bus or van to doctor's offices and other select locations, although some transit programs will take you anywhere you'd like to go in the area. You may need to make reservations and have patience, but the service may be free or cost less than public transportation. Riding buses, subways, and light rail. Learning to use public transportation can take a few trips and lots of courage, but once you've learned it, it's relatively easy. In cities like New York, where many people with perfect vision don't own cars and places are closer together, public transportation is actually the best way to travel, and you can do it with low vision, too. To familiarize yourself with the bus system in your area and to become confident using it, try the following 4 steps. 4 steps to riding the bus. 1. Call your public transportation authority for maps and schedules. If the print is too small, enlarge it on a photocopy machine. Many transportation authorities offer specific route information by phone for the visually impaired. Ask about discount fares for seniors or the disabled and pre-purchased passes. You may also want to ask for a bus mitten, which looks like an oven mitt embossed with the Transportation Authority's logo. You can hold it up to signal the bus driver to stop. If there is no bus mitten for your area, you can make a large print sign that says, "Bus, please stop," and hold it up when you suspect the bus may be coming. 2. If you plan to pay with coins, count out your bus fare at home and put it in a separate pocket so that it's easily available. Hold a white identification cane at the bus stop, or tell the driver that you have low vision. Ask whether you are boarding the right bus. Drivers are often required to assist riders by announcing stops by name and will be especially helpful if they know you have low vision. Request a seat at the very front of the bus so that you can hear the driver and he or she doesn't forget you. The law requires that these seats be given to people with disabilities. 3. The first time you use the bus, go with a friend or family member and have him or her show you how to do it. The second time, have your friend or family member simply tag along, make all the decisions yourself. Practice this way until you are completely comfortable with the routine. Once you have no difficulties, you're ready to use the bus alone. 4. Although mishaps are unlikely, have a contingency plan in case you miss your stop or the bus is very late. Your plan may include knowing the routes fairly well, bringing extra fare or taxi fare, and carrying change for a payphone and a friend's or family member's phone number, or a pre-programmed voice-activated cell phone. Keep an ear to the weather report, too. On very cold or very hot days, you might want to opt for another alternative if the bus service in your area is not reliable. The 4 steps for riding subways and light rail. You can use steps 1, 3, and 4 for the subway and light rail, too. With subways and light rail, it's also important to figure out where the train cars usually stop on the platform so you can anticipate where the doors will be before they open. Double-check with other passengers that you're boarding the right car, and count the stops in your head or with your fingers so that you know when to disembark. Buy tokens or subway tickets in bulk so that you don't have to fiddle with the fare machines every time you go. Traveling away from home. I used to go to Hawaii every February to visit my brother, Carolyn Smedley told me one day in my office, but I don't think I'll go now. But why not? I said. Well, she sighed, I just think it would be too hard with my vision loss. She's right. It probably will be hard, especially the first time she travels. But it's not impossible. It gets easier, and there couldn't be a more important thing Carolyn could possibly do than enjoy a vacation with her brother in Hawaii. Vision loss is hard enough as it is. Why make it harder by depriving yourself of something you really enjoy? Carolyn was probably thinking of a million little worries that added up in her mind. How will I change planes in Los Angeles? How will I be able to set up my things in an unfamiliar bathroom? What if everyone wants to watch a movie or play cards and I can't see either? These are all natural worries, but are they really valid? For almost every concern, there's an answer. After all, blind adults have been traveling and visiting friends for decades, and the people who care about you want to see you regardless of your vision, and you can still see a great deal of the world, even with macular degeneration. The trick is not to get caught up in how you've always done things, but look for new ways to make the world accessible for you. Tips: the early bird gets the worm. Travel is so much less stressful if you leave yourself enough room to make mistakes and enough time to relax. Keep key information at your fingertips. Write important information like flight numbers, phone numbers, and medications in large print with a black felt-tip pen so you can read it easily, or carry a pocket tape recorder and tape it all for easy playback. Alternatively, carry a pre-programmed voice-activated cell phone or a calling card number and a voice-activated personal desk assistant called a PDA or Palm Pilot after the popular brand. See the low-vision catalogs in Appendix C for PDAs. Pack for maximum ease. Pack neutral color clothes or clothes in the same color family for easy matching. Use separate plastic bags or tags for matching outfits. Use brightly colored cosmetic bags to organize items in your purse and suitcase so they're easier to find. Put brightly colored contrasting tape on both sides of your luggage so it's easily identifiable. Purchase or make yourself large print luggage tags with black block lettering that's easy to read. Keep your money handy. Carry a small roll of new $1 bills for easy tipping. Organize your money using the tips in Chapter 14. Be cautious with your purse or briefcase, but do not fear. Research shows that people with low vision are not at greater risk for crime in otherwise safe places, such as U.S. and Canadian airports. Make travel entertaining. Take a handheld four-track or regular tape player or a CD player and a selection of taped books, magazines, and music with you. Bring your large print playing cards, crossword puzzles, and any other games you enjoy. Adapt the new location to you. Bring your own alarm clock with big buttons and a desktop gooseneck lamp with an indoor floodlight bulb if you often use one. Spend time familiarizing yourself with your hotel room or your friend's home. Arrange your belongings for maximum visibility. You can even call ahead of time, ask about the facilities, and pack whatever you think might be helpful, including contrasting color towels for the bathroom. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. As you know all too well, most people with full vision have no idea what it's like to live with low vision. They probably won't be able to guess your needs or your feelings. In fact, half the time they won't realize what you can and can't see, or they'll make the wrong assumption. So the best solution is to speak up. Ask for what you want, and you will probably get it. Ask the flight attendant to show you to the bathroom. Ask the waiter to list the entrees if the restaurant doesn't have a big print menu. Ask your friends to turn up the lights and play with your cards rather than theirs. Explain your vision when you need to. Do the best you can to make the world work for you and have patience when it doesn't. All the best things in life take effort, and all the best relationships require compromise. Flying on airplanes. Prearrange assistance. Federal law now mandates that people with low vision have equal access when traveling. If you give the airline at least 48 hours notice, they must assist you in changing planes. This may involve accepting a wheelchair ride from one gate to the other. I know that you may feel uncomfortable appearing in a wheelchair in public when you don't use one at home, but this is not the time to let pride thwart your travel plans. In a wheelchair, you get a comfortable, stress-free ride while everyone else has to rush through the crowds. Who's the smarter one? Let people know you have low vision. If you arrive at the airport with a friend, tell the ticket counter clerk that you have low vision and request a pass so that your friend can accompany you to your gate. When you reach your gate, tell the staff you have low vision. They must allow you to pre-board or assist you with boarding and deplaning at your request, although they may ask you to wait until other passengers have disembarked first. Consider carrying a white identification cane or wearing a low vision button, see Chapter 14, in the airport, even if you don't use one at home. It can work like magic. The airline is required by law to give you up-to-date information on your flight if you cannot read the monitors in the terminal. If you use a white cane, employees will know right away that they should answer your questions, and other passengers will probably be much more receptive. Tell your flight attendant, too, so that he or she can be helpful. Use optical aids. Use your lighted handheld magnifier for reading tickets and your binoculars or monocular for seeing gate numbers. You can also take the same glasses for use on board as you use to watch your TV at home, although plain TV monitors are often difficult to see even for the fully sighted. Know your rights. Although such occurrences are rare, if you feel you have been unfairly treated as a result of having low vision, you can request to speak with the airline's complaints resolution official, the CRO, or write to the airline directly. Mistreating good consumers is bad business, and airline management knows it. If you use a wheelchair, see Appendix D for additional information on your rights. Enjoy your flight. The sky might be a bit bumpy sometimes, but what a pleasure to spend time with folks you don't usually get to see or to visit someplace new. Enjoy it. Adventuring for years to come. As Helen Keller once said, life is a daring adventure or nothing at all. As she showed us throughout her life, there are lots of adventures to be had, no matter who you are or how much you can see. There are many more things you can do in your home and around your community to make your life easier and more enjoyable. They're featured in our visual rehabilitation program here at Henry Ford Health System Eye Care Services in Michigan, and we've written them all down for you in the next chapter. This is the end of Chapter 13, and this is the end of Side 8, continued on Side 9.